Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello. Welcome to the show. I'm so delighted that you're able to be with me today because we are going to give you a little bit of a historical adventure into the past because of a woman by the name of Susan Martinez. Susan is a researcher. She is a woman that decided she was going to investigate the little people. Her book is called The Lost History of the Little People. The cover has on it a carving of what is described as a little person that is centuries old, and the stories within her publication are absolutely fascinating. I want to welcome to the show Susan Martinez. Susan, hello.
Hello.
Hello, Susan.
Now, yes.
Glad to have you on the show. Susan, you obviously are very much involved in writing. You're a linguist. You have been involved with paranormal research. You love to teach. And when you found out about the wee folk, I think that's a good way of saying it, you found that they actually had been recorded in cultures around the world. What's stimulated this interest?
Well, there has been quite a lot of talk about giants in the earth, but a considerable amount of research in some books in the last 50 years, 100 years. But we know that the folklore includes giants and dwarfs.
Mm-hmm.
The area of the little people is completely unexplored. And they are just as real as the giants. In fact, they are their predecessors here on Earth.
Now, with the little people, as you say, in every culture, Iberian, Russian traditions, Christian traditions, the Celts, I mean, We go back, and this is what you do in the book, The Lost History of the Little People. You go into the exploration of the legends, and legends usually, no matter how many centuries these legends have been brought forth, have nuggets of truth in them. And one of the fascinating things that you bring out is how, because of archaeological discoveries that involve caves, tunnels, many different parts of the world, these particular items, not items, but environments are being discovered. And people are saying, oh my goodness, isn't this amazing? We have so much of this that is coming forth now. And these legends of the fairies, the elves, the trolls, all really, you have found in your research, were based on actual peoples and how they affected life. When you've gone through, and how many years have you been involved with this? Because your book is just filled with so much information, and you've got so many references that you use. This must have taken you quite a while to put together.
Well, yeah, you've got to dig, because there's no easy way to find the stories of the little people, but they are there, and they're both extinct and extant. We have a lot of populations of small-statured people still living in the world today. And so the question is, who are their ancestors? So that's the material I trace back.
Well, you brought up so many fascinating aspects of different cultures. And one of the most unique groupings of people that I have become aware of are the Basque people. They have their own language. They are fiercely independent. Even those that are alive to today. They have their own language, which, unless you are Basque, usually you're not going to have a hope or a prayer of really understanding, unless you're lucky enough to have one of them teach you about it. But they have in their culture, for example, their folklore, it was the Laminex. Now, correct me if I mispronounced it, the fairy Laminex that built bridges for them in a single night. And I thought, this is something. These little people in the Basque go back, I don't know how far. I mean, they're a fascinating group of people, very unique in their historical perspective. Were you able to actually interact with people of the Basque background?
No, but my son lived in Spain for a while, and I asked him if the Basque people were short, and he indicated to me that they are below average height, so there's some kind of trace there of in the genes of what formed this race. The Basque are the only people in Europe who do not speak an Indo-European language. They go back to the previous era. And that was, talking about giants and dwarves, that was the era when giants and dwarves lived on the earth, and you see the mixture of that in the races today. But as far as the building, that's where you get into mythology and the incredible mixture of fact and fiction. You've got the same story about building it overnight in South America and in Polynesia. And in both cases, in all cases, they were little people. They were magical dwarves or something of that nature who built the pyramid overnight or who built the irrigation system overnight. The overnight really is a typical exaggeration of people who had skills and were able to perform these tasks at all.
You talk,
you know what I mean?
You talked of, in your book, and I just am intrigued with all the different cultures. You talk about the Neolithic man of Italy and Switzerland, and paleontology, as far as science is willing to acknowledge, was only about 5'2". Well, my goodness, that's my height. So these were little shorties. And there was a skeleton of a little man found in a Tuscan coal mine in 1956. There have been found all over the world. The little people in Switzerland were found in alpine valleys over a century ago. So these little skeletons are of adults, and there might be some children, but this is something that has caused a lot of anxiety in the scientific world because these people were not supposed to have been around. I mean, they've got this idea that human beings have only been around for so many thousands of years, when really this planet has been occupied for a long, long time. And you talk about a Slavic ancestor that was called Grandfather that was the size of a six-year-old, but this one that was found purportedly had the power to bless homes. And so many of these legends came about because these people were so very, very talented. They were extremely talented in metallurgy, in construction, in agriculture. I mean, these things that you've pulled out about these people that you have been able to document and put together in this book, and the historical patterning that goes with it, is mesmerizing. And we still have pygmies today, even though they're being eliminated gradually. But you, again, all over the world, there are these groups of people that are very, very small, but very talented.
Well, excuse me. Well, that's where we have to rewrite history a little bit, because this race, we could call them Homo Pygmaeus, or the original name of the little people was Ihin. That's spelled I-H-I-N. That's an ancient name. going to have to rewrite history and reconsider the Darwinian version of the ascent of man, is that we come from a spiritual type of man. It's not just a question of bones and morphology and the size, the shape of people and the cavemen. There's more to the story than the anthropologists or paleontologists are telling us. There was an original race of little people, and they were the first ones on Earth to have the spiritual faculty, to have the propensity to commune with the angel world. You see, little people, when they were first here, were just kind of innocents. They did not have knowledge. But you see, what it's all boiling down to is that knowledge didn't really evolve in the sense of evolution that we've been taught, but it came through the little people who were teachers. And how did they learn? They learned because they were in communion with the higher powers. They were constantly guided and protected by the angel world. There was a purpose behind it. They were supposed to be the ones to uplift humanity, because the only other kind of person that was around in that early time were a very primitive form of man, a creature who also has a name called Asu, a creature without speech, a creature that could walk on 2 feet but tended to scamper about, a creature that lived in the trees. See, this man was without knowledge, without insight, without consciousness, and without inspiration. He did not have the spark of life. It was the little people who had that, the connection to the divine. That's how they learned all their skills. They were taught through very regular rites of communion. They were instructed how to mine the earth for its metals, how to build ships for navigating, how to plant the earth for food that is good to eat. These things were learned spiritually. You know, I'm always reading books about the knowledge, the great knowledge of the ancients, but the point is that it did not really evolve over time in the sense of progress that we have envisioned, but it came through the teachers, the mentors, who were the little people, who learned it from their spiritual masters. And in a way, it's the same with us today. We tend to think that we're on our own, but we still do have a spirit world that is behind events on the earth.
Now, you have a lot of information in here that is about Native Americans and how in so many cultures, just in the United States, among the Native Americans, they have history about having little people that had brought knowledge to them. And one of the tribes, which I know all of my listeners are familiar with to one level or another, is the Hopi Indians. And they really had a tremendous wisdom. They were called the little people of peace, the Hopi. And there are a number of groupings of people throughout the world, like the Negritos of Malaysia, that I was intrigued with, because in their Batek society, no one coerces anybody else. This is not acceptable. Sharing is the rule. Women will bring samples of their food or their meals that they prepare to neighbors that maybe are not able to do anything for themselves. There's a very, very low level of conflict.
And they call them the Filipino little people, that they had a degree of social unity and cooperation that never were observed. The Eta have no sense of money or land ownership. And when you think of the Western world as we know it today and on so many different levels, that would absolutely be a quandary for a lot of people to even consider. And in their own nature, the nature of the people themselves is, well, it's extremely peaceful. And they don't worry about what one has and one doesn't have, that envy is not something that is a part of their environment, because they, you know, it's like the Samoans. The Samoans, in their culture, if you went and borrowed a shovel, that wouldn't be offensive. You would just say, I would need it. And people say, sure, go right ahead. But there, among the old Samoans, the ancient Samoans, it was this same kind of an attitude, although they did have a bit of a warlike nature themselves. But you have Ireland's little people. You have the Scottish people. You talk about the Algonquins. You talk about different groups in Africa. Well, to be able to shift thinking regarding history, for a lot of people, they go, you've got to be kidding. You've got to be kidding. We can't shift to looking at history in this way. But you have done a fabulous job of presenting this information, and how many times in different groups when a vision quest was done or something was needed, and I want to refer to the Native Americans again, they talk about how the little people would help them. This is something that is in their culture, and they don't mock it, not at all.
We all have these genes, because this is how the human race was produced, by the intermarriage of these races. We all have Aihin genes. We all have genes from the little people. After all, we're not giants like they were before. And it's no coincidence that the pygmies of the Congo, for example, have never gone to war. They don't know warfare, and they are little people. And because we have to compare that to their ancestors, the original little people, who were totally, they were the priests of the ancient world. They were totally peaceful people. They were forsworn against a killing of any kind. They were totally vegetarian. And when we find enclaves of these little people in the world today who know no war, and have a similar egalitarian society as had the little people of the old age, it's not a coincidence. It's a an inheritance. And we all have this. And the reason I spent some time explaining this in the book is to counter the argument that says that we have a an aggressive instinct. Now, maybe we have a tendency, but it's not the same as an instinct or something that's built into us and necessarily going to manifest, such as the wars that we have today. This is not necessary, and this is not an inherent part of the human heritage. This is only the lower side of human potential that is coming out. Sometimes theorists want to make it an instinct in order to excuse it or to justify it in some way. But that's why I spend time showing that a good part of our genetic heritage is from the little people and does not involve any violence at all.
You have information about Japan. And Aihin, you said John Richardson, who is a friend of yours, was in Japan and mentioned the name Aihin, and that's how I'm pronouncing it, I-H-I-N. He mentioned this name to a Shinto priest, and the priest said that that these are the same people mentioned in their history books about Japan, and he pronounced it Aini, like in wine, and they are the short original white people of Japan. And I was so intrigued with all of this historical information that you were able to find, because there is historically all of this history that somehow or another has been maintained. And in the Asian cultures, they're very, very good at this. And they have a deep regard and a deep respect for their history. And this is something that, to find this out about Japan, I think your statement that we're all hybrids, I love that. I've always called myself a Heinz 57. And I was talking with someone just last week that said, yep, I'm a Heinz 57 too. Well, we were talking about being maybe Irish, Scottish, Italian, or whatever. But there are these genetic factors that have been discovered because of recent technologies. And the Inuits, the Eskimos, they have, you know, they're just, it's amazing the links around the world. Now, how did the flood play into this? Because this had a phenomenal impact, and we all know how every culture on this planet has a historical legend or story about the Great Flood and how people were assisted by individuals. And in South America, it was often the little people. They weren't giants, they were little people that were recorded historically. Let's go into that a little bit.
The little people were the survivors of the flood. That's number one. I'll itemize it, then I'll try to pull it together. Number two, the flood was not universal. And number three, the flood was actually the sinking of the continent in the Pacific Ocean. Number four, that happened 24,000 years ago. Number five, the little people, because of their extra faculty, psychic faculty, were able to know in advance that continent would be sunk. And they were advised by their spirit helpers to prepare and to build ships. And they did that. They built five fleets of ships, and they dispersed to all the regions of the world. I've been studying the lost continent of Pan. I call it Pan. Some people call it Mu. Some people call it Lemuria, in the Pacific Ocean. That's one of my specialties, and it's completely tied in with the story of the little people. When they escaped, and I should have said number six, the survivors are just the same as Noah and his sons, as portrayed in the biblical version of the flood, the great deluge. Okay, so those are the facts that I begin with. The sons are recorded in the Holy Bible as Shem, Ham, and Noah. Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Shem would be those who arrived in India. Ham would be those who arrived on the east coast of Africa. Japheth would be those who settled in China. And there were two more. There was Yista, who landed in Japan, which we were talking about a minute ago. And there was Gautama, who came to America. So there were five fleets. And they were the little people who were saved. to expand on that story, to go back onto the background would involve explaining that before this time, before 24,000 years ago, the little people had been persecuted in all parts of the world by the barbarians in the world. and they were wiped out. They were exterminated in all places except the land of Pan in the Pacific. But there, too, they were pursued and destroyed, and at this point were hiding in the mountains. That's when the preparations were made for their escape. So that's the background of it. When they settled in each of these different divisions of the world, they tended to mix and intermarry, even though they weren't supposed to, with the local people, and that's how more crossbreeding came about, more mixing of the races, more hybrids, and they also shared their knowledge. What I'm getting at here is that they brought the story of the flood to each of those lands, and that's how it became interwoven in the mythology of so many places. It doesn't mean that the flood took place in those places. It only means that the story was brought to them, and they had some reminiscence of it.
Well, if you are interested in learning about the Cloud People of Peru, Native American tribes, their history, going into European history, finding out about what is called fabrics and ferry bolts, yes, there are archaeological artifacts that have been found showing that people were extremely skilled and talented in metallurgy, in weaving, in so many levels. And her research is amazing to read. The Lost History of the Little People, their advanced civilizations around the world. And I'll tell you something, with the cover, with the picture of one of these little people, I noticed the tongue was sticking out and hanging down, and that is a Tibetan welcome greeting. And when I saw that on that carved on that statue and looking at the structure of the carving, it reminds me a great deal of the facial structure of the Tibetan people, even today. And if you go over there, if someone sticks their tongue out at you, it's not because they're making fun of you. It's because they're honoring you, respecting you, and welcoming you. And I thought this little stone carving is quite an interesting picture to view. And I want to thank Susan Martinez for being my guest today. Susan, what is the website that people can go to find out more about your writing, your work, your research?
I don't have a personal website. I work with a few other people, and we have a science website. There is a new science connected to the research we do and the same sources that I use for the Little People book, and it's called earthvortex.com.
Earthvortex.com. Well, Susan, you've done an incredible job, and I think anyone, after reading this, would have a whole different perspective on the history that we have been taught versus what actually has been found. And I think you do a wonderful job of presenting it. This is Donna Sebo. Thank you, Susan, again for being my guest. We're taking a break. When we come back, well, some other good things we're going to be sharing with you. But if you love history and you want to find out about what has been found, plenty of good stuff to read in The Lost History of the Little People. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have a product or service that you would like people to know about? Internet radio is a powerful medium that can assist you in reaching people who like to shop online and pass by electronic word of mouth information about you, your products, and or services. The Donna Sebo Show reaches around the world, and you can be part of that enterprising network. For more information, contact Vision Broadcasting via Donna at DelphiInternational.com.
Or call 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. That's right. If you want to call in and chat with me, if you have a comment about the interview, or if you would like for me to do a mental reading for you over the air, whatever. I would be delighted to do exactly that. Give me a call. All I need is your first name or initial when you call in, 888-627-6008. Well, I always like to save money. Are you of that mindset? For me, I'm shopping around. I was visiting with someone just this past weekend, and we were talking about the difference between guys and gals and how all of we women that manage the budgets for our homes and our businesses perhaps even as well, we're going to shop around. And I was talking with a young mom, and it was so cute because she was telling me how, and her husband was sitting right there, she said, I discovered XYZ. She wanted to know. I had fixed a wonderful meal, and she wanted to know how I got this, that, and the other, and so I shared it with her, which is what we gals do. We'll say, I want to know what you did. Where did you get the best deal? That's what we women do. That's just a part of us. We're taught this, and we just keep on doing in that way. So I was sharing with her information. I mentioned this one particular store, especially when it came to buying food, that you were going to get first quality. Prices were great. And we were going on this, and she said, oh, I want my husband to go there. And her husband said, I really don't care, which is what guys often do. We women really are interested in saving money. Now, when it comes to saving money, maybe about tools or guy things, the fellas might be interested. But I know for most men, they say, well, just go buy it. Don't worry about it. It's no concern. But again, if you are someone that really wants to pay attention to how you spend your money, it's always good to find out information. So I was sharing with her how to do certain things so that she could get the best amount of value for the money she had, and she got all excited, and she said, but I want my husband to see it. And he said, but I really don't care, just go do it. Well, there's many ways to save money. And if you're like so many people, you know you're going to get certain bills every month. Well, maybe something's changed. Maybe you've changed your job. Maybe some of you are unemployed. Maybe you're getting your checks at a certain time of the month and the bills are coming in on a date, which needs to be rearranged. Well, whatever the date is for your billing, and if you're ending up with late fees, you want to change that. That's right. If you want to stagger your bills as they come in so you don't find yourself financially drained, you can do this. Call the companies and ask for a different due date. Do you know they'll do that? That's right. How many of us think of that? Not often. So if you're working with managing your money, think of that. If maybe paying something at a different frame of time during the month will work for you, go for it. Call up whatever company, utility, credit card companies, etc., and change the date. They can do that for you. Also, you've got to be aware of phantom fees, and banks are really big on this, as well as some credit card companies and sometimes even certain businesses. You've got to be aware. You really have to look at your bills. You really have to check your credit card statements and your banking statements, because all of a sudden, there may be a fee that suddenly appears that you just didn't have a clue was there. And I'm like you. I'm guilty sometimes of just paying bills and just putting things aside, not really noticing, as I did finally, on a banking statement where I had had no fee charged, they went and reintroduced the fee. Now, there had been a letter sent out, but the letter is so nondescript when you get it that you read through it and it may not even register. It's really fascinating stuff. So you have to check for those fees. I had to go into my bank, ask what this was about. They said, oh, well, this is what we're doing. The banks have to make money. And with all of the different regulations that come in, they have to do all kinds of shifts and changes. So we have to really pay attention to those things. Also, if you're paying for cable, satellite, internet, cell phone, et cetera, do you know that a lot of these companies are willing to negotiate with you? They really are willing to negotiate. You will find rates go up, and you just need to call customer service and say, wait a minute, these rates keep going up. What's happening here? How can I lower this rate? Because you might find your bill going up as much as $8 a month. Sort of like taxes. They sneak them in. So be aware. Also, if you've got a loan, if you've got a student that has a loan and, of course, the compounding interest rate, remember what works for the lenders, the compounding dollars on an interest rate. Let's say it's 10%. That adds up to a tidy chunk of change at the end of the year. Well, what you might want to do is bundle your loans, number one. That's one option if you're able to do it. But also an option we don't often think about is that if you have got a billing, let's say a credit card billing, and if your billing is $200 a month, well, if you pay $100 one week and then $100 maybe a week or so later, what that is doing, that's affecting the interest. And it's the same thing with a home payment. If you have a monthly payment on your home mortgage, you can divide it into two monthly payments, and that's going to whack down the interest that you're paying out. But more importantly, if you pay against your principal twice a month, you're going to find with a home loan or any loan, your interest rate is going to be lowered. So keep that in mind on any kind of a loan that you have. But before you start dividing up payments, you've got to check with your bank or whatever loan process you're using, because you know what? Sometimes they'll put on extra fees. Now, I'm telling you, there is a lot of stuff going on out there. So because we're in the electronic age, many times we forget to check on these things. I know. I'm guilty of that myself. Donna Sebo here, 888-627-6008. Well, I wanted to share with you, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Eric Mysel about how to make a creative mark. Now, this can apply in any area of your life. And I think too many times we get so linear in our thinking, we forget about this wonderful, wonderful, magical side of the self that is creative. And not everybody's going to be a musician. Not everybody's going to be an artiste like a Michelangelo. But there's so many different ways that you can do things creatively that really you just need to get in the zone. That's right. You need to be aware of that part of yourself, because it does translate into an awesome experience when you do it. And it's fun. It is a very good social environment to work with. So we're going to be talking with Mark about that, or Eric, excuse me, about that. And then Maggie Shannon, she is a woman who's known for her wonderful crafting, but she's put together this marvelous publication about how, if you get into crafting, you can create something not only that is of your design, but more than that, you can use it as a tool for meditation, for getting in touch with yourself, calming yourself down. There's so many wonderful tips that Maggie shares. So we've got this and much more that we're going to be sharing with you this week. And I invite you to join me, because it's always delightful to be able to share the wonderful, wonderful skills, insights, wisdom, knowledge, whatever term you want to use, that so many good people have taken the time to make available to us. And that's what the Donna Siebel Show is all about, personally empowering you. And saying that, give me a call if you'd like for me to give you a reading, 888-627-6008, so I can empower you in your life to be more aware of what you can do for yourself. There are many people, especially those that are elderly, that love their animals. And there is a suggestion that was brought to my attention. If you know of anyone that is having a challenge buying food for their pet, you could be eligible for a pet food stamps program. I had never heard of this. Have you? I hadn't. This is a new privately funded nonprofit organization that provides complimentary home delivery of pet supplies to those that really need them. And you can submit an application. You can visit petfoodstamps.org, and it may take a few weeks, could be as long as 3 weeks, before they will let you know if you qualify for the enrollment in their program. Now, this is privately funded, so you're not dealing with a government organization, but what a wonderful idea. And I think it's terrific, because there are so many people that they just don't have the means, and if they could have the food to take care of their pet, they wouldn't be dumping them off at the Humane Society or abandoning them on the side of the road. Or, you know, just there's just so many wonderful, wonderful animals that need homes. And if you know someone, do that for them. Hi, this is Donna. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, Donna. My name's Donna as well. And I'm calling from Canada, the Toronto area.
Well, I am delighted that you are calling in, and thank you so much. Donna, what I'm looking at right now in my mind is a lot of paperwork. I think there is I will call it a legal issue, but I'm not seeing a courtroom with this. I think there is going to be a reevaluation. This could be regarding some insurance. It is something that I feel the legalese that you need to read through can be very frustrating. I'm looking at a number of pages that are typed in small print, and I, like you, you just sigh and say, gee, why does it have to be so complicated? But you do need to go through it, and I would suggest you have a highlighter. And if you want, make a copy of whatever these documents are so that you can read through paragraph by paragraph. And sometimes it's a good idea to use a ruler so that your eyes don't have a tendency to speed read down. And we all have a tendency to do that because it just gets to be so weary trying to read the tiny print. But I'm looking at this, and if you use your highlighter and there's any area on a copy that you have that you're concerned with and you go back and you question it, for some reason I think you might be reviewing some papers for someone that you know. It could be a friend or member of family. It might have something to do with their medical care. And you need to be able to ask the questions. And once you do that, and of course you're going to really shock people, because the people you go to get the answers, they're going to say, I don't know what you're talking about, because they've never even read the silly things. So you're going to say,
I'm a little confused because I'm trying to figure out what document this is. Do you think it's to do with me or somebody else?
Well, it might be for someone else. That's what I said. This might be for someone else. You're going to say, let me help you. I think this is for someone else.
Okay, because I'm working right now. Like, I just went on my lunch break so that I could call, and I work from home, and I send out documents to my customers. Maybe it's the document I'm working on right now for a customer that maybe, could that be it? I don't know really what.
No, don't worry about it.
Because I don't really have any major legal things going on in my life right now. I'm pretty
stable. No. It has nothing to do with any legal activity per se. All right? There's not a courtroom involved in this. This is something that is in your hands, and it's something that goes along. This could be dealing with a credit card. It could be dealing with all kinds, you know, just something. It's not unusual for people to get these kinds of documents. So whoever this is related to, you're going to review it very carefully. And you're going to note certain areas. And that's why I suggested using a highlighter, so it's easy to find.
Then when you
go through it and you call whoever put out this item and say, I've got a question about this, I've got a question about this, And like I said, they're not going to know because they've never read it. So you're going to need to talk to someone that can be really specific with you. So talk with a supervisor, and you'll get clarity. And then whoever this is for, you'll be able to share with them what you learned so that they understand it, because they're not going to be able to read it. I mean, it's just, it's tiny print, sort of like the stuff, you know, when you get with a prescription. They might have 4 or 5 pages of something that's so tiny you need a magnifying glass, even if you've got 20/20 vision, just to read the silly thing.
Okay.
So all of this.
So you think I'm going to help somebody with this in my life, like somebody that
I think you are. Now let's get down to you, because what I'm watching is that you're going to be going to a conference of some type. This is a small conference. It's not with thousands of people, and it is a conference that I think is giving updated information. The people that will be speaking will be presenting information that is very, very recent. And there may be some things that they are going to talk about that will be quite significant to you, and you'll have a chance to learn what you need to do to make any adaptations. Now, Donna, we have to take a break for just a moment. Will you stay with me, and then I'll get your question?
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
we'll be back
in
just a moment.
Okay. Great.
You're welcome.
If you are an author and would like to be a guest on the Donna Sebo Show, please send a review copy of your publication along with a press release to the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. Allow 6 to 8 weeks for your material to be reviewed. Again, the address to send your material to is the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. Have you ever had a paranormal experience, such as seeing a ghost, having precognitive dreams, out-of-body experiences, or other happenings? If so, Donna would like to hear from you. She's putting together a book of 100 stories from people who would like to tell their story. If you'd like to submit yours, send an email to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Again, send your story to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Be sure to include your contact information as well. Thank you.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome back. 888-627-6008 is the number to call in. We're talking with Donna in Toronto, Canada. Donna, what's your question for me today?
Well, actually, I wasn't really sure. I kind of was just, I'm looking for maybe some advice as to where, what the next important thing in my life might be. I'm kind of in a, I'm just looking, and I'm trying to find what my purpose is, I guess. And I really want to, make a difference in the world. And I think I'm doing that just by living and being, you know, I'm going about my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of just trying to feel out what the next thing is. I'm pretty happy in my job, and I have a good life, and everything's healthy and great. But I feel like there's something that I should be doing next, maybe after this job, or, you know,
what
in
kind
my
of
life.
Work are you involved with? Because what I'm looking at is you're an educator. You really enjoy being able to bring people into new understandings of how they can make their lives better on one level or another. What kind of work are you doing at this time?
Right now, I am selling office equipment. I work in it as an account manager, and I work in sales. So I work with a lot of people, but you're absolutely right. I'm always, you know, educating my boyfriend on, oh, this is really good for you. Oh, I found out this amazing information. And so I you're absolutely right about, you know, I want to mm-hmm. help people, but I try not to be too, you know, pushy with information. I try to, you know, let people make their own decision.
Well, obviously, that's the best way to do. That's what a good educator does. You bring forth and allow people to see what their options are. What I would encourage you to do is to, for the fun of it, just for the fun of it, don't make it a big deal because you've got enough on your plate as it is, but sign up for maybe the opportunity to check out, let's say, a Dale Carnegie course or a life coach course or anything that allows you to see how other people make their presentations. And then look at those arenas, because I'm not really seeing too much shifting dramatically for about 5 years. So if you can do this, if you can invest in yourself in this way, just out of curiosity, have fun with it. Look at how you perceive certain presentations, what you would do, what you would not do. And then when you start really developing your niche, and that is going to be in about 5 years, when you start developing your niche, you're going to be able to practice. And I don't know what the rules are in Canada. I know one of the best places to exercise teaching skills to practice is the public library. We have, in the United States, we have libraries that have rooms where people want to put on programs for free to the public, which is mandatory, then you can do that. And I think that you're going to discover your niche that you really resonate with. It could be anything. And you're going to then want to do little mini programs, and that is going to begin a journey for you that I think is going to be absolutely delightful. And eventually, I am seeing you working in what I would call the teacher-educator format, and you'll be able to make a very good life by doing that. But I think you are really in the right place for yourself right now because
you
are developing really good, solid areas of expertise and understanding when it comes to business. And I would say any class you can attend, anything that your company supports of that nature that's going to enhance what you're doing, go for it. Sign up for everything. Take it. Study it. Learn it until it just becomes second nature to you. And that'll be part of what you're going to be able to pass along, too. So I think you're going to be quite successful in your own business, but not for a while. It's too soon right now. You're going through a learning curve. So be patient with where you are, Donna. You're doing a good job.
Thank you so much. That totally makes sense, and I always do. I feel that there is an entrepreneurial. I've had my own businesses in the past. I'm still in my 30s, but I have in my early 20s, I had my own business and, you know, tried that. And I am very entrepreneurial spirited. And so I see that as well. It's funny that you would mention that because I've always seen that. It's just finding what it is. So I'm going to take your advice and keep practicing and just going with what I'm doing and just keep building on what I already have to take me to where I'm going, wherever that is.
I agree, Donna. And I'm out of time, dear. I want to thank you for taking time out of your lunch hour.
Oh, well, thanks so much for taking my call. It was kind of a nice, it was a wonderful gift for me to be able to speak with you. And I really appreciate you taking the time to give me your advice and everything.
You're more than welcome, Donna. Have a magnificent day. For those of you listening, won't you join me tomorrow? We're going to find out how you can expand your creative self. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You are so special. I say that to you because I really sincerely mean it. We all stand on the shoulders of those that go before us, but we need to make sure our shoulders are good and strong so that we can pass along our knowledge, our wisdom, and our light of knowledge and understanding so that those that come up behind us will be able to do as we've done, and that is make a place in this world that's going to leave it better than, well, when we came in. This is Donna Sebo. You are the master of your fate. Join me tomorrow. I look forward to having your company. We'll talk then. Donna Sebo here. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.